We're with John Schumann, NBA.com, advanced stats writer, at John Schumann, S-C-H-U-H-M-A-N-N, on Twitter. Yeah, I want to ask you a couple specific questions, but interesting, one of your recent articles talked about the best matchup in the early round is Damian Lillard and Chris Paul. Didn't so much see that early, but I agree. When that goes back to the Moda Center, I think that has a chance to go six, maybe seven, depending on how quickly Portland can grow up in a whole different environment than the regular season, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, they're well coached, and Lillard and McCollum are two guys that can catch fire pretty quickly, and so I think they always have a good chance to do some damage in any game, in any half, in any quarter. So I think even a 10-point lead against them isn't safe just because of how explosive they can be offensively. And they've improved defensively over the years. So I think, they have a shot. I think the Clippers played really well in game one, and then I think maybe it was a little surprising how well Blake Griffin looked, and I think that's obviously a key. You know, he was out for so long. He missed 47 games, and so to have him come back and play as well as he did last night is a huge lift for the Clippers and makes them maybe a better team than we thought they were.
That's a great point. I'm wondering about the rust versus rest, that old question. And, you know, if you're Blake Griffin right now, assuming that you're completely healthy, boy, you have to feel like, you know, you haven't had a season of bangs and nicks and you know, bumps and bruises and tiring and all that kind of stuff. It's almost like they're getting him completely fresh.
It's true. It's a good point. You know, we're going to see how it works out going forward. Obviously, Portland is a tough team, but it's a front line that he can do some damage against. And then, you know, if they get through there, then it's the Warriors. So who, you know, obviously if he's playing at a high level and he could sort of work out the rust in this series, then maybe they have a puncher's chance against the Warriors. They did play the Warriors pretty tough in a couple of games early on before he got hurt. So, we'll see going forward. But I think, it's a good point about not having as much mileage on his tires this year as everybody else does.
Right. Also, you wrote recently about Kawhi Leonard, and to me, you know, the Spurs get a lot of credit over the years, and sometimes it's just assumed that they know more than they might actually know because things break their way. The drafting and the trade, George Hill, and then taking, what is it, the 16th pick, Kawhi Leonard, that's a dream scenario. Is he the best two-way player in the world right now?
I think so. You can make a case for Draymond Green, who's also an elite defender and really improved offensively this year with his playmaking. But Leonard, yes, is you know, the best perimeter defender in the league and a much improved offensive player, ranked third in 3-point shooting, which is an amazing fact considering where he came from when he was drafted, tells you how good Spurs player development is. And I mean, that's a big part of his ascension is the work he put in and then the coaching that he's had in San Antonio that, you know, if he was drafted by some other team, maybe he's probably not the same player that he is right now.
That's a great point. And also, I think it's it also speaks to the culture there that this is the Parker Ginobili Duncan team that also a year or two ago, led by Popovich, told Kawhi that it's your team, which is quite a statement to make to a second or third year player.
Yeah, I mean, it speaks. I always, you know, Tim Duncan is the ultimate example, I think is the ultimate number one pick in my mind, just not only talent, but the way that he's for a long time was their best player on both ends of the floor. He's still a great defender. And his leadership is second to none in my mind in that he's coachable. You don't see that with, say, LeBron James, you know, the coachability aspect to him. And then, you know, his willingness to defer to guys as his career has evolved. and take a back seat, and continue to, you know, flourish and realize that, you know, this is the best thing for his team, and it's paid off. You know, for them to be as good as they are, as good as they've been throughout his 17, 18 year career, is just amazing.
Yeah, no doubt. We're with John Schumann. A couple more minutes with John Schumann, NBA.com advanced stats writer at John Schumann, S-C-H-U-H-M-A-N-N on Twitter. Asking about the Jazz, from the analytics, from your stats perspective, what's the takeaway from this season? I mean, to me, I thought it was a net negative that they didn't make the playoffs when they, you know, they lost 7 of their last 12 home games, including the Nets, which was, you know, was that was not good, and then losing to a Clippers team that didn't bring their starting five in crunch time. They had to have these wins, they didn't get them. So from that perspective, I feel like they should have made the playoffs. But from your perspective, tell Jazz fans kind of where they sit at the end of the season.
I think they, in general, they did take a step forward this season. Yes, it was disappointing in, one, how the season ended last year, and they were so good defensively after right. the All-Star break last year, and you thought, okay, this is going to be the number one defensive team in the league this year. The Gobert and Favors injuries in the middle of the season hurt that, but even then they weren't as good defensively when those guys were healthy as maybe as they were at the end of last year, and maybe that was fool's gold a little bit. But I do think they took a step forward, and then, you know, just some really disappointing losses at the end really hurt them. Obviously, you mentioned the one to the Clippers, you know, losing to Dallas at home at the yeah. end is what ended up killing
right.
them. But I do think, like I said, I think they took a step forward. I think the talent, the young talent they have is promising. I don't know if there's a superstar on that roster, but I really like Rodney Hood going forward. I mean, this guy's only in his second year and took a big step forward, and really has the skills to be a lead guard in this league. And Favors and Gobert are a tough front line when they're healthy and playing together. Obviously, they need a little bit more talent, but you have to like some of the pieces that they have. Like I said, especially Hood and those guys up front, and Gordon Hayward is solid and is that sort of second level of small forward in this league.
Yeah, last thought for you, and I won't get into it because obviously, you know, they have some huge contracts, including Gordon Hayward, who can opt out after next season just in time for the major NBA upgrade in salary cap and influx of $90 million per team, which is good timing. I'm sure that was all done by design by Hayward's folks. But when you look at this Jazz team and three-point shooting and just generally offensive explosion is kind of something that's the last thing that they want to develop, but it's certainly part of what Quinn Snyder wants. And in this league, you don't just look no further than Golden State to understand how important three-point shooting is. They didn't really address it in the offseason. They had a chance to take Devin Booker. They took Trey Lyles, who will turn out to be a good player, no question. Is this now the time for this team to sort of go get shooters? Is that one of the pieces that you think they need?
Yeah, it's definitely a piece they need. You know, there's the Miami Heat are sort of a team that has somehow become a good offensive team without much three-point shooting, but
right.
I think in general, yes, you need some shooting. To play more efficient offensively. Yes, they do need maybe to play with a little bit more pace and try to get also just get easier baskets in transition and early in possessions. This is a team that ranked high in passes per possession and passes per game, but it's just like, you know, there's two or three passes at the start of every possession that really don't go anywhere, and they just sort of get them into their offense and they end up going late into possessions a lot. And I think they need to get to try to get a little bit more early offense. Have somebody who could really push the pace for them a little bit more. I mean, they're young; they should be able to run more than they do.
That's a great point. Lastly, does anybody? I lied and said it was the last question, but just quickly: Golden State, Spurs, Cavs, Thunder. Who wins it all? I mean, obviously, Golden State's an easy pick. Is there a team there that could surprise? I guess the Spurs. Warriors winner, assuming that they meet, would be the one you looked at?
Yeah, obviously I think Cleveland is a little bit too flawed
right.
beat one of those two teams out of the West. The question for me, I think the big question for me is will the Spurs get through Oklahoma City? I think,
right.
We do like to assume that it's Spurs and Golden State, and obviously that would be a fantastic series if we get it. But Oklahoma City has had the Spurs number a little bit over the years, and that's going to be a tough matchup for them. So I think that could be a really interesting series in the conference semifinals that could sort of upset the idea of a Spurs-Warriors conference finals.
Yeah, that's a great point. And if not, at the very least, extending the Spurs to 6 or 7 will make Golden State happy. Hey, John Schumann, thank you so much for spending a few minutes with us. Sorry about the little bit of confusion at the start, but great stuff. Appreciate your insight. John Schumann, NBA.com, advanced stats writer. Thanks for joining us here on the Morning Drive here in Salt Lake City.
Thanks, Tom. Anytime.